3 weeks ago, I did a sermon on love, and the title was Love Is Not. We'll talk a little bit about that just to catch us back up. But I wanted to show you this picture, see if anyone knows what this is a picture of. Moses, it's right. It's a statue. It's a statue done by Michelangelo. And it's specifically a statue of Moses. I have not been to see it. I would like to see it. Some of you have. Some think it's his best work. The reason I show it isn't that I'm into statues, although I think they're interesting. I think trying to get that out of a block of stone is pretty amazing. An unbelievable artist. But this particular one, this is a close-up of Moses' head. And if you'll notice, he has horns on his head. The hair there is not just poorly groomed. It sticks up in a pair of horns. Now, this is a statue that was commissioned by the Pope that was... what do they call it? Sculpted by probably the greatest sculptor of all time, of what many consider the father of faith in many ways. Abraham is a father in one sense, but others think of Moses because of he's the one who got the law and put it down. And so and then you have the statue with his horns. Now, the reason for the horns is in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew, the word for glow or shine or glory is the same word as horns. And so when Michelangelo was reading about Moses to figure out how he wanted to convey him, he wanted to convey him as the post-engagement with God Moses. Moses, as he read it, came down from the mountain with horns, as opposed to the glory of God. And that's what we now have. If you go to Italy and you go see this statue, and for thousands of years, hundreds of years, sorry, there's been this statue with horns. Now, I really, really want to meet Moses for a lot of reasons. I have some questions for him. I won't go into those because we would be here a long time. But I'd also like to know what he thinks of the statue of him with horns. Now, there's an off chance, just so we're fair, that he actually had horns. But not many people think so. And why I put this up here is how important words are and how important it is to be accurate in the words that we use and the way that we act upon those words. I don't know if Michelangelo was embarrassed by any feedback he got about his horned statue, but I would be if I had made this statue, and then for the rest of human history, people saw a statue with horns, and I'd actually curious to meet him too and go, was there just a joke? Or did you not know? Or did you really think he had horns? But words matter. And today, we're going to talk about what love is. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, to catch us up, I talked about what love is not. And it's difficult to talk about love because we use the word so much and it carries such an importance in our society in some ways and in others not. But what we talked about was there are different ways that love could be used. You can have love. It could actually be a possession of yours, that I have love for this thing. It could be a feeling or an emotion. I feel love towards something. It could be a behavior or an action. You'll see that sometimes love is a verb, or it's an action that you do. And I said, well, we actually end up, if you process it out long enough, it's a decision. You get that from sort of the positive do-gooders in society, that instead of just being something you feel for somebody, you make a decision. You decide, I'm going to love. And all of these, while they are right at some level, aren't what love is. What I contended a couple of weeks ago is that love is specifically a gift from God, because God is love. And in our lives, in our engagement with other people, the problem that we have, if you go off of that love is a decision or that it's an action, is it can be very artificial. Just acting as though you love somebody. I'm going to make a decision, even though I really don't like you and I don't want to be around you, I'll act like I do. I will give you some food, or I'll point or make a compliment towards you or whatever, and it can become fake. But for all of these things to be true, whether it's something you possess or do or feel or whatever, there has to be a change in your heart. For you to have love for someone, there's a change that takes place in your heart. And what I was trying to communicate a couple of weeks ago isn't that that's something you just kind of hope happens, but it's actually something you seek. That you have the ability to go before your Father and say, Lord, I need love. I need it to develop in my life. I need it for this specific person or these people, whatever that might be. And that, see, what I think made Jesus unique, other than the fact that he was the Son of God, was that he had actual love for every person that he met, as opposed to that he followed a behavior pattern that made it look like he cared for every person that he met. He legitimately, in his heart, loved people. Now, I still have this thing, what does that mean? Well, we do know this in terms of, in Galatians, it talks about the fruit of the Spirit, and the very first one's love. Some people will say that these stack on top of each other, and first there's love and then joy. I actually think that love is the foundation for all these, as opposed to a vertical stack. I think all of these stack on top of love. Once that you have love in growing in your heart as a fruit, as other fruits can grow as well. But one way or the other, God will begin, as you follow him, to put love into your heart more and more for more people. I have met people, you probably have too, that I need to go to the Lord and say, Lord, I need you to help me love this person. And won't even go into why that's the case, but all of us have certain affinities for different types of people. There are different things we connect with different sorts of people. And there's people we don't connect so much with. And I believe that that isn't the requirement for love. The requirement for love is a willingness to receive it from God. And at that point, that fruit can grow. So when we're talking about, and this slide I used last week, when we're talking about that we love cats and New York and ice cream and that, we all know that's not the usage of the word that I'm talking about. You can still, and we can all still say, oh, I love ice cream or this movie or whatever it might be, and that's fine. It doesn't have to diminish the value of the word, because actually I think what needs to take place with all believers is an expansion of the word. That it's actually become so small and trivialized that we have to figure out what it is and then seek after that. So that's what I'm hoping we get to today. So I'm going to ask you, when you say, I love you, what do you mean? When you say or hear, let's say you hear it, if I say that I love you, what do you hear? You should have some question come into your mind. What are they actually saying? When Betty's sitting here, and I can honestly look Betty in the eye and say, I love you, because I do. And Betty has some idea, thank you, has some idea what I'm talking about, but probably she isn't going to sit there and go, well, I wonder what that, does it mean? But just what she said there, we're going to come to this later. It's the most central issue for us, being loved and expressing love, real love. It's why it's so difficult when we run into the fake stuff. But what ought to be the case before you ever say, I love you to somebody, is this question: what do you mean when you say it? Are you just saying it like Christians say it? Hey, love your brother. Love your sister. Or are you saying it like sports people? Love you, man. What are you saying? Because society has all sorts of meanings in it. And interestingly enough, a concept like love really ought not to evolve or adapt all that much. And here's why I would say that. Almost every other concept does. But if love actually is the essence of God, then it doesn't change. Society might change how it applies what it thinks love is. But what love actually is can't change because God never changes. So the issue we've got to get our brains around is, what is that? And what do I mean when I say that? And what do I expect when I hear that? It's become popular in wedding vows, instead of saying until death do us part, to say until love do us part. That's actually in wedding vows now. And that's an interesting question. If you actually think God love, then you should be able to superimpose God for love, so that would really be saying until God does part. I don't know how all that works. But here's why I think it doesn't, is we just don't know what we're saying when we say, I love you. We don't know what we are committing ourselves to, and we need to. Because here's what Scripture says on terms of what's supposed to happen. Be on your guard, stand firm in the faith, be courageous, be strong, do everything in love. 1 Corinthians 16, 13 and 14. Do everything in love. Jesus said this, and we all know this, a new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. So he set the bar pretty high there. As Jesus is loved, that's how we're supposed to love. And then he, in another place, raised the bar again and said that we're supposed to love our enemies, which seems incongruous to me. Our enemies seem like the people that we hate. God's calling. He's saying, I love you, Susie. Love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. It leaves me with this same question. What is it? Now, most of us know this next thing I'm going to put up, but we're going to throw it up here just so we're all playing on the same field. There's a couple of different Greek words for love. There's eros we're not going to put up because it's not really what we're talking about, but agape and phileo are the two pieces of love that the Greeks would distinguish. They had others as well, but the ones that we're looking for. And phileo love, this is where we get the city name Philadelphia, comes out of this, but to be a friend to have affection or fondness for. This is the word you would use for a friend or a brother even. It would be a camaraderie type love. We enjoy hanging out together. We like each other as people. We have similar affinities. There's stuff that keeps us tied together. And then there's the agape love, unconditional and unwavering, committed to, and it's an act of the will. But if both these are in Scripture, it still doesn't really tell us what it is. And I find myself sometimes frustrated because Jesus said, I want you to go love like I loved. And Jesus was so far above me in his understanding that it's like, how do I do that? What is love? Well, we lucked out. Okay, I don't believe in luck, but we'll say that. We lucked out because we're actually told what it is. 1 Corinthians 13, which Kay came up and read, we're not going to use the whole piece, but we're going to use a little bit of it because it actually says love is. And it's going to tell us what love's supposed to be. It doesn't matter if it's agape love or phileo love. And this is where I think sometimes if you're trying to get sort of biblically inclined, we get confused as well. There's these two different types. And which one am I supposed to have? They're parts of the same. They're parts of the same. It's not as though that somehow phileo or brotherly love is not supposed to be unconditional or uncommitted. Or vice versa, that those uncommitted or those completely committed love that's unconditional, we're not friends with them. They're two words that are describing different experiences of the same core thing. And here in 1 Corinthians, where it explains what it actually is. So before we get into it, I'm going to warn you ahead of time. If you know this, you're responsible for it. So this is your last chance to slip out. Anything you don't know, you're not as held as accountable for in the scriptural context. And so if you don't know this, nobody? Okay. So we're going to work our way through. And from that point forward, you're saying, I at least am committing to knowing this. And it starts off that love is patient, which I think is Paul's first cheap shot, because he knows how not patient, at least I am. But I think people, we're not inclined towards patience initially. And interestingly, another fruit of the Spirit. Patience means I put up with a lot. I was watching a little video. My sons like to, they watch all these YouTube videos and videos on Reddit, and they show me one once in a while. And there's a video of this kitten and a puppy. And if you've ever had either a cat or a dog, they're very different animals. It's not simply two renditions of the same type of pet. Puppies are playful, and they'll put up with just about anything. Cats, less so. So there's this little puppy, and there's this little kitten, and the puppy just keeps whacking him. The puppy, or the kitten, just keeps whacking him, and the cat doesn't really respond. And then the puppy gets up and starts biting it on the ear, and it doesn't respond. So the puppy goes around behind the kitten and bites its tail right against its backside, which I guess makes some sense. But the kitten is just a little bit bigger than the puppy, rears up on its back legs and takes its paws and just starts flailing the cat's or the puppy's face. Just whack, 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 whack. And the puppy just stood there. Now the kitten displayed a little bit of patience for a little while until it was bit in the rear. The puppy, endless patience. Because this kitten, and I think it's why I was on there, I got bored, and it was just pretty entertaining for a while, but I got bored for how long that kitten just sat there just whack, 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 whack. And the puppy was just like, whatever, dude, we're friends. That's patience. That's love. Now, animals, I didn't want to get into that, but just example-wise, when we're thinking about that, this is God explaining to us how we are supposed to interact with other people. The very first one that said is patient. Kind. We know what kind is. To take care of somebody else. To do intentional gestures to care for somebody else. I got an email from a friend a couple of days ago, or maybe yesterday, that just had a suggestion on a way that our church might be able to care for each other a little bit better. That the suggestion was to, I won't even go into what the suggestion was, but it was an intentional encouragement for us to be kind to each other. Because I was working on the sermon, I thought this is what that's talking about, is actually intentionally thinking about how can I take care of another person. That's what kindness is. Now, this next set of three go together. It does not envy, it does not boast, and it is not proud. What that little section is about is that it's saying love doesn't turn its eyes back onto itself. Love doesn't, let's say that somebody else has a nicer house or a nicer car or a nicer dog or whatever it might be. That's the envy part. It's not, I'm not watching, instead of being, oh boy, I wish I had their car or house or dog or whatever, I'm happy that they do. The reverse of envy is that I am encouraged by somebody else's blessings as opposed to wishing I had them myself. Boast is to be talking in terms of that I accomplished this. Have you ever been in a conversation with somebody where you're telling them about something and they immediately spin it around to themselves? Just whatever you bring up. Yeah, I was fishing the other day and I caught a fish. Oh, I did. I caught a fish. That's not a fish. Let me tell you about a fish. People have this ability to spin the conversation to themselves. That's the boast part. And then proud is to spin it to themselves and exalt themselves. So what this section here is saying is that my relationship with you, if it's a loving relationship, from my side is about you, not about me. That I love you. I don't love you loving me. Does that make sense? Because that's the easy part to do. I really love people that love me. People who compliment me or offer to help me. It's easy to love. This is saying that's not the issue. The issue isn't you. The issue is them. So that's why those three are connected together. This next one, it does not dishonor others. Do you know what honor means? Honor is to build up. Honor is to raise up for attention and for accomplishment. And to dishonor is if I am doing something to minimize or take down somebody else. Oftentimes, we think of this in terms of talking badly about someone, gossiping, and it is that. But it's more than that. Human beings are competitive. Human beings like the spotlight, even when we don't like the spotlight. Human beings want to be successful. We want positive affirmation. And so to get that, one of the things that we'll do is subtly try to pass up another person a little bit, say something. This is what Sark and Jerry talks about this fairly often, about sarcasm. Sarcasm's job is to cut somebody else down. Yep. There is humor that isn't at other people's expense. Not a lot, but there is. Sarcasm is tearing somebody else down. So that you look better. That's what dishonoring is. Anytime where I'm trying to put myself ahead of somebody else or I'm trying to bring somebody else back behind me, that's dishonoring them. And you might have good reason. They might have done something that was dishonoring. Your desire to share that with other people isn't love. This one's hard sometimes. We don't usually want to dishonor people that we have fun with and we like and those kinds of things. But remember what Jesus said, that we're supposed to love our enemies. I don't often struggle with dishonoring, except with my enemies. And I don't have a lot. But I have a few. It's fairly subtle. There are times when I just want people to know how right I am. Because clearly I'm usually right, right? If you have enemies, all I would ask you in terms of this is think about how you, not how you interact with them, but how you interact about them. That's where this happens. I try to bring down people I think are very wrong, and people I think are causing damage, I'll just use one example. At my school that I teach at, there are some people who I think are fundamentally wrong about education and how it works with kids. And I will find myself sometimes making sure that other people know how wrong those ideas are. That's dishonoring. There are other ways to accomplish what I want to accomplish than trying to bring down what somebody else is doing. It doesn't dishonor others. It's not self-seeking. This is a weird one because by nature we are self-seeking. That's what we have to do at some level, right? I go get food out of the fridge for me. I go to the grocery store to buy food for me and my family, but the reality is if I wasn't hungry, I wouldn't go probably. But self-seeking is saying my needs are the most important. What I want is what matters. What I need is what matters. And somebody it might rightfully ask, well, if you don't look out for you, who's going to look out for you? And there's one answer. Actually, there's two. God, and if the church is functioning correctly, everybody else. Let everybody else take care of you. And let God take care of you. Don't seek your own stuff. Now it's going to get more difficult. So I'm going to give you one last chance to slip out because some of this is fairly simple. It is not easily angered. Don't Don't you wish it didn't say that? Yeah, I've had enough. Part of what I wish that it said, I just wish it said it wasn't angered. Because it says not easily angered, and that creates this weird tension. When is it okay for me to be angry? Because it is okay to be angry. Just not easily. Someday I'm going to do a sermon, what's anger? Not today. But I think it's going to help us understand it. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. If I could tell you how many times I've had this conversation with other people who are trying to figure out their relationship with the Lord and love and all this sort of stuff, it's like, how do I forget something? Which is a fair question, right? If somebody today came up and punched you in the nose, and then you read this tomorrow, it keeps no record of wrongs. That's kind of tough to get rid of, right? Next time you see him, you might stay 3.5 feet back just for safety's sake. But let's say you were able to let it go for a little while. They must have just had a bad day until tomorrow, and they punch you in the nose again. Now we might be able to go back to it's not easily angered and say, okay, we're past that. I'm not easily angered, but you've punched me in the nose twice, but I can't keep records of wrongs. Well, I think it helps us more when we continue on. If we read this one, love does not delight in evil. That seems really abstract and out of nowhere in this list of stuff. We're talking about love, and that is how I don't know very many people who delight in evil. That word delight can be translated a lot of ways. It means to savor or stew on or focus on something. And now, but it says evil. And even that's confusing until we put the whole sentence together. Remember, this is all in context. He's essentially just pulling in sort of rant. Proverbs does, right? It's just a piece of this, piece of that, piece of that, piece of that. This isn't Proverbs. This is intentionally crafted this way. And so love doesn't delight in evil, but what does it do? But it rejoices with the truth. Well, what does that mean? Is truth the opposite of evil? Yes. Because truth comes from God and evil does not. But we have to put this whole set together, I think, for us to understand this. It's not easily angered. It keeps no records of wrong. It does not delight in evil, but it rejoices with the truth. Here's how I think this works. Human beings hurt each other by nature. I'm selfish, you're selfish, we can compete for who's more selfish sometime, but one way or the other, all of us are not only selfish, we're broken, we're dysfunctional, we have all kinds of baggage, we do all kinds of things wrong. We're going to hurt each other. What this is saying is we need to accept that from the front side and not keep getting angry every time every single thing happens. Oh, that makes me mad. Well, that really ticks me up. Oh, man. And we've been around people. We might have been people like that. But I know a couple people who are that way. Everything just sets them off. And I can get that way too. If I'm having a bad string and it's all of a sudden, boy, that I got 15 things that I'm angry about. That can't be. But we can still get angry because that's part of our emotional set. And our emotional set was actually given to us by God. If you think that before the fall we were these completely non-emotional creatures, absolutely not. God gets angry. There are times where anger is a legitimate response. But what are we supposed to do with it? First of all, not keep a record of it. You can't go, this is the 47th time this has happened. If it's the 47th time it has happened, you should have dealt with it 45 times ago. Because that's what the rest of this is talking about. Love doesn't delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. That's connected. The thing it's saying we shouldn't delight in is stewing on the record of wrongs. The evil is the unforgiveness. The evil is that this dark thing is in me because of something somebody else did, and I'm going to delight in it. I'm going to savor it. I'm going to hoard it right here inside of me. That's a good feeling. You might think I'm whacked out, but you do it too. That's a good feeling. Somebody hurt me, and I'm going to fester it like a boiling pot. Like a boiling pot. But the problem with a boiling pot is eventually it boils over. And the problem with a pot, boiling pot that boils over is eventually it runs out of water. And then you know what happens? Ask the Claflins. It burns the house down. That's what happens. You have to put this piece together. You shouldn't anger easily, but you're going to anger. And when you do anger, don't allow them to stack up. What you need to do is not let it fester inside, but share it as a piece of truth. You hurt my feelings. You hurt my feelings. If I could add one sentence to the church's vernacular, that means terms that we use or phrases that we use, it would be that one. Not, I won't forgive you. That hurt my feelings. What took place there in that meeting, or when you said this about me, or when you forgot to call, or when you did the... Now, every single thing? No. Why? Because we're not going to easily anger. Most stuff we're going to bounces off. They didn't. They just weren't thinking. But eventually, something's going to happen, and it's going to stick in here. And we're going to have a choice to make. I'm going to stew on it, and I'm going to stack them up. Boy, they did this thing last February, and then in March they did this, and then this. And all of a sudden we got this festering pool of anger. And we feel good about it. What this is saying is if you want to rejoice with the truth, it's to sit down with somebody else. I love Betty. If Betty did something that hurt my feelings and it stuck, I would need to sit down in that chair and say, Betty, you got a minute? I need to start off by saying, I love you with all my heart. And this thing that happened last week hurt me. And if you want fear, that's it. Because the potential rejection when you admit that you're a human being and that you were hurt, the vulnerability of that, maybe you in your life haven't experienced that ever working well. That doesn't mean you don't do it. That hurt my feelings. I forgive you. That's not what this conversation's about. I just need you to know that that hurt me. And that might be the end of the conversation. It might not. But when you say I love somebody, you should be committing to this, to honest communication about the condition of your heart in reference to them. This is where relationships die, right here. The inability, the unwillingness to share honestly, you have hurt me. I'm not ending our relationship, but for our relationship to grow, you need to know that you hurt me. That's right smack in the middle of what love is. And we think love ends with love is patient. Oh, I just need to be patient. Most of the time, yes. Oh, it's not right for me to be angry. Most of the time, true. But sometimes you are. And that might be something you need to confess with the Lord if it seems like this is out of control. But what you need to deal with other people, this hurt me. And I need you to know that. So then we get, let me just throw that because this is an Ephesian verse that if you want backup, Ephesians 4:15, I forgot I stuck it in here. Speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of Him who is the head, that is Christ. The same thing, being truthful with somebody else about very scary, vulnerable stuff. And now look how this verse finishes up. Love bears all things. Bears means to carry. Love will carry everything. It believes all things. That means that you trust and believe that this can work out. It doesn't mean that somebody's lying to you, just go, oh, okay. That means that you have faith in the value of the relationship. You will carry anything. You will believe in anything. It continues on to hopes, all things. I hope that this can be resolved. I hope that our relationship can become a blooming flower, not this dead weed. It hopes all things. And lastly, it endures all things. The difference between bears and endures. Bears means I'm going to carry other people's stuff. Endures means I'm going to put up with it. There's stuff sometimes going to brush against me and cause me pain. And I'm going to endure that because the most important thing is our relationship. And then look how it ends. Verse 8. Love never fails. We've gotten it wrong in the church. This belief that relationships are temporary is nonsense. There's no such thing. And I believe one of the biggest affronts to God is telling people you love them, but not meaning it. The confrontation with the actual Spirit of God. Oh, I love these people. I love this person. I love that person. Until this happens, and then I walk away. Love hopes all things. It bears all things. It believes all things. It endures all things. And it absolutely, real love, absolutely never fails. Now, if we don't have time. If you have a question about, well, what about in abusive relationships? I'll talk with you. I'd be happy to talk with you. There is a different contextualization, but love still never fails. We still don't have permission to not love. How you manage that, there are scriptural ways to manage abusive, violent, frightening relationships. But that's not the case for most of us. Most of the time when we end relationships, it's just because we're disgruntled or we've been hurt and we haven't learned how to deal with it. There is ways to deal with those things. Proverbs 19:22 says this, what a person desires is unfailing love. Yeah. This is why Betty said she was going to cry, and I would too. Because it's the desire of my heart to be loved with real love. With real love. Not just to be liked or shined on, but to actually have somebody all in forever. Because that's what love is. So Jesus gave this commandment. This is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. I'll put it up here on the screen. It's a command because it's not easy. It wasn't a strong suggestion. It's a command that we love. And he didn't just say that you love one another because he knew that would be us loving our way. He demands, commands, says we have to love the way that he loved. So here's what love is. Love is an active, difficult engagement in true relationship. The most important thing in the kingdom, we've been told most of our faith life, if we've been together, is relationship. Relationship is love. The reason why the most important thing in the kingdom is relationship and reason it's love is because God is love. It's two separate expressions of the exact same thing, the character of God. This is why it's so important we get it right, because we're misrepresenting God when we do it wrong. The only thing that love actually is all that stuff in 1 Corinthians 13 and a dead fast commitment to staying with that. Being absolutely true. If I tell you I love you, that will never change. And I will never stop pursuing your relationship with me. I believe that's God. Amen? Amen. Amen.